This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, the world is approaching, maybe, a crisis that will be very significant for all of us. It concerns, of course, the increasing tensions between Russia, Vladimir Putin, and his neighbours, principally the Ukraine. There's nothing new in this. They annexed the Russians to Crimea 8 years ago, and they have been fighting in eastern Ukraine, in Donbass, since 2014, and 15,000 people have died. It's a continuing war. And of course, Putin has a history of aggression. And now there's a buildup of 140,000 estimated troops, Russian troops, on the borders of its neighbors, principally again Ukraine, but not simply Ukraine. And that is a major issue. Last week, in Washington, President Biden held a pretty disastrous press conference in which he allowed the possibility of minor incursions, which alarmed Ukrainians and indeed alarmed the rest of the world. But the West generally is weak and seen to be in disarray, and Putin may regard this as a moment of opportunity for his expansionism. And in particular, what aggravates him is the possibility that Ukraine would be free to join NATO. And of course, without American support, which these days can't be guaranteed, NATO would be amount to very little. To discuss this crisis, we're joined now by one of the most distinguished British journalists, John Kampfner. He's a journalist, an author, and a broadcaster. We had him on the stand recently to talk about his book, Why the Germans Do It Better, Notes from a Grown-Up Country, which is a wonderful book recently published. But John began his career as a foreign correspondent for Reuters news agency in Moscow and in Bonn in Germany. He was the Daily Telegraph's first columnist in East Berlin, where he reported on the fall of the Berlin Wall and the unification of Germany. And then he worked as the bureau chief in Moscow for the Telegraph at the time of the dissolution of the Soviet Union. He went on to become chief political correspondent for the Financial Times and political commentator on the BBC's Today radio program and political correspondent for Newsnight. So nobody is really better placed to analyze what we're seeing. John, thank you very much for joining us on The Stand. This is a moment that is making many people nervous, principally perhaps because of the weakness or the perceived, weakness of the West, the developments in the United States, Brexit, and many, many things. How dangerous is it, and what is Putin up to?
So many good questions there, some of which I can hazard answers. I cannot get into greater people and minds than myself are unable to get into Vladimir Putin's mind. But I can hazard a guess as to what his motivations are. And also, as you say, the weakness of Europe. I mean, first, let's look at Europe. I mean, why the Germans do it better. The one area they emphatically do not do it better, in my view, is relations with Russia and China. And let's just stick to Russia at the moment. I tear my hair out the way they have historically, since the Second World War, dealt with Russia. Now, just to backtrack a bit, I mean, Germany's Eastern Front campaign in the Second World War against Russia was truly, truly, truly horrific. The yes. barbarism, the annihilation of entire villages and towns. There was such a sense of far worse than on the Western Front. And Germans have been fixated with the idea, and you can understand it on its own terms, with making good with Russia, making amends.
Yes.
And so Willy Brandt, the Social Democrat Chancellor in the 70s, devised what was known as the Ostpolitik, the reaching out to the communist East. And it was considered a great success. It led to détente, and or it contributed to détente. And you have all of that. The issue that I keep on saying to Germans, who this isn't a matter of ignorance, it's a matter of just taking a different view, is it's one thing to want to atone for what you did, but that means working to help reinforce democracy in Russia and in other countries of the former Soviet Union. It isn't about ingratiating yourself with one of the world's most vicious
yes.
dictators, otherwise known as Putin, who imprisons, kills, poisons anybody who gets in his way, anybody who tries to investigate his enormous fortune, estimated some time ago to be $50 billion, and that's probably an understatement, and the crooks around him. There's nothing sort of ideological or romantic about Putinism. It's a sort of Pinochet-style, dark glass-wearing dictatorship.
Yes.
And that's where all this sort of German romanticism just leaves me completely cold. And you had even this last weekend, the head of the German Navy, who mercifully had to resign immediately, saying, oh, what Putin needs is more understanding. But you even have the German president, Franz-Walter Steinmeier, a very respected guy who's just been renominated for a second term, a former foreign minister, somebody with really good credentials, a really grown-up figure, saying in a speech not so long ago about sort of we need to understand Russia better, and that means we need to accommodate Putin more. And those two things in my book are just so opposite.
Yes, and it's notable that when Britain decided to send some arms to the Ukrainians, Germany refused permission to fly across their airspace. And indeed, Germany is one of the big arms producers in the world. They have not sent any arms to the Ukraine. They've sent a field hospital. And one of the German ministers in the new coalition, I think it was a Green minister, said they were very careful because of the history,
yeah.
Which seemed rather weak. The other issue, of course, is the proposed pipeline, a gas pipeline between Russia and Germans, upon which I understand, John, that the Germans are rather dependent.
Yeah, absolutely. So Germany is bizarrely, for a country as wealthy as it is, it's always been quite vulnerable on energy and has always needed energy from elsewhere. And when Merkel took the wrong decision, in my book, after the Fukushima nuclear disaster in Japan, to speed up the phasing out of Germany's nuclear energy provision, and various nuclear energy installations were shut down at the start of this year, with more next year. That made Germany more dependent on two really dangerous things. One, coal from its own coal power stations, which are terrible, obviously, for the climate.
Yes.
And the other is gas and oil from elsewhere, and particularly gas from Russia. Now, this Nord Stream 2 pipeline has been put on hold for supposed technical reasons in the late autumn. That gives Germany 6 months of a breather. They can just continue this suspension thing. And I think that's what's going to happen. But if this pipeline, if stroke when this pipeline is brought on board, it is going to be, to me, it's not so much the energy dependency side of things, because that's pretty much there already. It's the signals it sends to Russia. I mean, Britain is a small part player. I mean, we can get into the kind of partying and the clowning that Johnson is up to. The Germans are not thinking, oh, look at Britain, it's sending things we need to copy. But it absolutely does look to the United States. And notwithstanding the fact of Biden continually misspeaking and hardly giving the best of impressions of being a tough guy, the Americans, and particularly Congress, are pretty much united, and it's one of the very few areas where Democrats and Republicans are united in their approach and in their tough approach to Russia. And it's not just the Americans. You look around Europe, the three Baltic states, small though they are, play really quite an important moral role in the European Union. And what's absolutely fascinating is that Sweden and Finland, EU yes. members, but hitherto not members of NATO, are now actively considering joining NATO because of Putin's behavior. So medium term, what he's doing almost is reinforcing European Union unity rather than dividing it, which has always been his game.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Now, last night, Biden, as it were, and the West woke up. There was a video conference call, which included the UK, France, Germany, and interestingly, Poland, which has skin in this game, of course, because we do know, and you from your time, I'm sure, in Moscow for Reuters and in that sort of area, Putin really wants a number of things. I mean, in his dream, he wants to recreate the Soviet Union and at least the Russian Empire. He does not want, we understand, a thriving democratic Ukraine to which Russians might look and think we'd like some of that next door to him. In his meeting between Sergei Lavrov and Antony Blinken in Geneva last week, they explicitly want a guarantee that Ukraine will never join NATO. That meeting didn't appear to go very far. But as you said, John, we can't appease this gangster because he will only, like all, want more. And is Poland in play here? I mean, Lithuania is in play, Latvia. If he were to get away, I mean, it's 8 years since Crimea, since they've started a war in Donbass. We need to draw the line, but the West doesn't appear to be in good moral form. And with the uncertainties in the United States in terms of isolationism, support for NATO, this was a good time for Putin to flex his muscles.
Yeah, I mean, Putin is regarded, and he's said it several times, the collapse of the Soviet Union as one of the great tragedies of yes. the 20th century, is how he called it. And he didn't talk about Soviet communism. He talked about the Soviet Union, or he could have used the term like the Russian Empire. You need to slightly differentiate between things. Now, the three Baltic states were basically just seas. They were really never part of it. And I think he would love to destabilize them. He knows that as members of NATO, he would end up probably in some kind of full-scale war with the West if he did that. But he does a pretty good job of trying to destabilize them through cyber attacks and everything else. But the West is really hot on it, and they are very, very determined to resist. Belarus has been an absolute basket case, and Lukashenko falsified elections, has pretty much slammed all the opposition in jail, and has been helped in this by Putin's forces. And in return, he's had to re-swear loyalty to Russia. And you saw recently almost spontaneous demonstrations in Kazakhstan that were put down thanks to the intervention yes. of Russian special forces. Now, those countries are important, really, really important, but nothing is as important as Ukraine. And Ukraine, in the Russian mind, is Russia.
Yes.
It is not a separate country. And you just need to just think about that for a moment. Russia, as a country, began in Kiev. It was called Kievan Rus. And so sort of spiritually in the Russian Orthodox Church and in sort of Russian nationalism, they are blood brothers and sisters. And in the Soviet Union, they were regarded pretty much as joined at the hip.
It was known as the breadbasket of the Soviet Union at one stage. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. It's more southern. It's more agriculturally beneficial. It had really strong industry, very strong culture, science. Losing Ukraine was an absolute wrench for Russia. And Ukraine is a mixture of all the republics have Russians in them, Russian populations. But there's the further east you go in Ukraine, the more Russian it is. And that's why Putin he engineered the uprising in the eastern region of Ukraine, which is basically just a sort of civil war, a perpetual civil war in the Donbass area of the east. The Crimean Peninsula was pretty much always Russian, but it was given by Khrushchev back to the Ukrainians, slightly bizarrely, in the 50s as a gift. And when Putin annexed it back in 2014, that was hugely popular in his own yes. country. And it would be very, very hard, I think, to get that back. I think Putin is smart enough to know that a country the size of Ukraine, with a huge amount of Ukrainian nationalists, very proud Ukrainians now, even some ethnic Russians who regard themselves as Ukrainian nationalists, to have a full-scale war, an ongoing, long-running war with Ukraine, would be really problematic. What he, I think, is trying to do is permanently to destabilize it, just to almost make it a permanently failed state or failing state.
Yes.
And we'll see what he does now. And that's why Biden's remark last week, as you pointed out in your introduction, Eamon, was so unhelpful.
Yes.
The idea that, okay, well, as long as you don't send whole battalions over the top, things will be fine, if you just sort of constantly destabilize the country. I mean, in a way, that's what he may intend doing. But on the other hand, more than well over 100,000 forces, some of which have gone several time zones from the Russian Far East all the way across the Urals to the border with Ukraine. It seems a strange thing to do to amass such an enormous army, and then just to keep them there forever or send them home again. So I think he's got a number of scenarios, and he's just waiting to see.
Yeah, there was breaking news late last night, John, that a tactic he used in Donbass, which was sending in surreptitiously small groups of forces, the Green Men they were known as at the time, that who were then in place to take over, that there are such forces now in Ukraine as we speak. The bigger problem here, would it there is a growing sense that of American isolationism. The Republican Party, to all intents and purposes, is going rogue, if you like, in terms of NATO. Trump was very hostile to the whole idea of NATO and paying for it. Isn't that a geopolitical picture that looks deeply troubling from a Western perspective? And China, for example, would be looking at what's happening now and thinking Taiwan, which is on their hit list and number one on their hit list, way above Hong Kong. So we are now at a moment, are we not, where the West has to show what it's made of. In other words, this weakness that clearly exists. Europe has no weapons. Europe doesn't appear to have much will. They keep talking about, I noticed that the foreign policy high representative, Josep Borrell, says dialogue is what we need. Dialogue won't do it on its own, will it, John?
I think there's several ways of looking at this, Eamon. I mean, there is an optimistic way, and I'm not normally prone to excesses of optimism, which is that Putin may be galvanizing the West again in a good way, and the Germans will be pivotal on this. And I don't think we've heard the last word on this in Germany. The Green Party, paradoxically, is the most hawkish. And the new foreign minister, Annalena Baerbock, was pretty tough when she was in Moscow seeing Lavrov, and she made a point of going to Kiev to see the Ukrainians first, whereas Scholz, the chancellor, is much more in the traditions of mainstream German politics of sort of appeasing the Russians. So I think there is still, Germany is fascinating in terms of how it responds to whatever Putin does. But I do think, I think the chances of Trumpism, either Trump or Trumpism returning in 2025 with the 24 elections are highly likely. But
yes,
I'm not convinced now. The Americans are incredibly hawkish on China. And I'm not convinced that Trump's bizarre, and one never quite knows what was the motivations or the threats or whatever under blackmail underlying his bizarre relationship with Putin. I suspect that the sort of the mainstream part of the American security establishment have wised up to Russia and to China. Yes. Now, where that leads is something else, but I don't think America realizes is now concluding that it is in its own national interest to withdraw from these two hugely sensitive theaters of diplomacy or potential battle, depending on whatever happens.
Yes, I mean, one remembers Trump's embarrassing and rather craven attitude when he stood alongside Putin in Helsinki at that infamous press conference, which I'm sure you remember.
Yeah.
But I think it is the isolationism of a new Trumpian Republican Party that might cause some anxiety. Just to ask you a couple of final questions, John. One is about NATO and Europe. NATO without United States backing is what? And Europe itself amounts to what? I mean, Macron wants it to develop independently of America and develop as a force in the world, but he's not winning that particular argument. The Poles and the Hungarians have issues of all kinds. There doesn't appear to be unity of purpose. And in the case of Europe, any means by which to deter, if you like, expansionism, if Putin decided, for example, he would like Poland back.
Yeah, I think again, on my previous point, I think this also applies to NATO. I hope I'm not going to be wrong, but I think that Trump's flirting with withdrawal from NATO and all that sort of stuff, I can't see that anymore. I really, really, really cannot see that anymore. I mean, famous last words, who knows if he comes back in and how unhinged, even more unhinged than before he will be. But there is just such a sense now, and even he was criticizing Biden last week for being soft on Russia. So I just don't see that as being in play anymore. In some ways, the weaker the European Union becomes as an institution, and this is the kind of British Brexiteers' wet dream, the more NATO comes into play. And Britain always wanted Europe to be much more of a sort of security institution and an economic one than a political one. And you have the Brits now, as you know, as part of the of the group of four, with the French and the Germans being very much engaged with the Americans, even though outside the European Union. You have Poland, which inside the European Union is causing mayhem, but being very much on the side of the hawks when it comes to Russia and Belarus. And as I say, you've got Finland and the Swedes being very close now to the Baltics and flirting with the idea of joining NATO. I think in some ways, NATO is the institution to watch at the moment.
Okay, and a very final question. May Putin have caused himself more problems than he anticipated and bitten off, to use a bad metaphor, more than he can chew here?
Like to think so, but I think it has so corrupted, in both senses of the term, Russian public life, which was never particularly strong. He's changed the constitution so that he's in power until 2036, or for as long as he wants to. And to be honest, he can't ever leave power because there are so many
people. The police are becoming.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, where do you begin to start investigating Putin's dodgy dealings? So he will stick around for as long as he needs. I think the only potential, but there's several, you know, points down the road for this, danger for him is if he gets embroiled in a sort of Afghanistan-style many-year war with Ukraine, which would, you know, with body bags, thousands of them, and the Russian economy getting even weaker and all that kind of thing. But I think we've got a long way to go before that. I think he's looking for a couple of quick little wins on Ukraine. And if the Europeans and the Americans, and it's hard to know what they can give him. They can give him some arms control, talks, concessions. Basically, he's just like a sort of teenager at a large family table who is just shouting a lot because he wants to be noticed and he wants to be heard. And in some ways, that's quite an easy give for him. I don't think the West has got any illusions about his longevity. The most savvy Western policy is just to make him feel good about himself, but try to keep him inside his box.
Okay, John, we're very grateful to you for joining us on the stand, John Kampfner. John is based in Germany and is a former correspondent in Moscow and an author of a very, very interesting book, Why the Germans Do It Better, Notes from a Grown-Up Country, and many other really, really fascinating and award-winning books, including a biography of Labour Foreign Secretary Robin Cook, who so bravely stood up to Tony Blair when he was invading Iraq. We're grateful to John Kampfner, to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.